life might hand you budgets, schedules, family, and responsibility, but driving shouldn't be just another chore.
We're here to help you find a car you love. Something that fits your budget and your needs, but is fun to drive and makes you look back. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul, and this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. We are, of course, you can hear the audio quality is a little bit different, which means we are with Tom in Frankfurt, Germany. Yeah, we're on the road. So we are here together. Say hello.
Yeah, I have to say hello.
Yes, you do.
Well done, sir. Just superb podcasting happening. But we're back. We've been back a little over 24 hours at this point, Paul and I. We got in ridiculously early yesterday, so you're hearing this on a Saturday.
Yeah.
We got straight from the plane, straight to the rental car, drove straight to Stuttgart. We were all excited. We felt really good about ourselves. Somewhere halfway through yesterday, we both almost fell into a wall.
There's just suddenly no amounts of espresso can fight that off. Yeah. So we jumped into a Seat Leon at the airport, just immediately jumped onto the Autobahn, and it was very cleansing to
You were going 100 miles an hour on the first... maybe 2 minutes of getting in that car. Yeah, it was very
I'm telling you, it sharpens the senses.
Yes,
it
well, you were
really
far more awake than I was as a result. Absolutely.
Of course, we got to Stuttgart and went directly to the Porsche Museum and the dealership there. And if you've ever been, yikes. I was there 2 years ago with a guy that I knew, but it was really, you know, a bummer. I was thinking about you. I couldn't have you there. Yeah. And so it was nice to... to kind of show you everything that I am immersed in, which is nice.
This is true. Well, but we
it
went
was
to
great.
The, and went to the Mercedes Museum today.
Yeah,
and I
yeah, yeah.
pointed out to you the big like subtitles of both those museums.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Porsche's subtitle is essentially just, by the way, we make light cars that aren't very powerful, but guess what? They win everything we put them in. That's the undercurrent of the Porsche Museum.
They want you to know that.
And the undercurrent of the Mercedes Museum is, by the way, did you notice that as soon as we left horses, it's thanks to us very much.
Yeah. I mean, welcome, world. Exactly. We invented the car.
We invented the engine. Our engine went in everything. Everything that moves.
Much.
We have made one.
Pretty much.
Which is very cool. It was much more of a historical museum. But it was funny to see kind of the different... thrust of each museum, if you will.
I mean, Porsche touched on the history. They had to.
Well, but the history of their brand.
But of the brand.
Mercedes
was
pretty much like,
from.
Thank you, modern world. You can thank us now.
Exactly.
You're welcome for the Mercedes brand. Which, hey, it was cool, though. It was very cool.
It's amazing that two giant car companies that are so well-known share the same town.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know there's probably Mercedes manufacturing all over Germany. You've probably driven by factories everywhere, but it was just cool to see, you know, we dominate this town. I'm sure you work for one of the two car companies if you live in Stuttgart, but it's nice to be back. It's, you know, we've had a lot of rain today and jumping around, driving on the freeways back in Frankfurt and about ready to start our pilgrimage.
Mm-hmm.
So people come in tomorrow on Sunday.
Yep.
They're flying in and we're just going to be hanging out waiting for them. And in the meantime, we should just talk about our experiences so far.
Sure, certainly.
What we've seen.
We do have a car debate coming up. We have some questions. Thank you, as always, for sending those. And we have some questions we want to cover. I have a question for you, Tom, on your Autobahn drives. When do you do those?
What time of day, you're saying?
Yeah.
It depends. Like, if during the summer, I like to go out at, like, 9 p.m.
Okay.
So you still have light, but you don't have a bunch of traffic.
Sure, sure.
So, but other than that, if it's, like, let's say autumn, I'm just going to do it, like, a Sunday at around 5.
Okay.
And hope for the best. But sometimes you just got to do it whenever you get good weather.
Yeah.
Because obviously
if
it rains, you're not going to do 300 kph and stuff like that.
You're not going to be doing that.
I was doing 205 today, and we went from no rain at all to sudden rainstorm. And I was like, this is pretty fast all of a sudden.
Suddenly things change. Yeah. The equation changed, that's for sure.
Yeah, I know you're just going to aquaplane. Don't do that.
Yes.
That's not a great idea.
Yeah, seriously. Seriously. So, yeah, we were backing off of that. But I was running a little right around 205 in this little base. I mean, it's a Golf. Little base Seat Leon.
What motor do you have?
So,
1.4?
If that.
Yeah, it's
probably
it's
something
the rental.
Like that.
It's the rental. When it's not on boost, you're not even sure it's running, let alone giving you power. So, yeah.
Let's put it this way. We're so excited.
So,
we
essentially, it's got a very smooth motor then.
Yes, it does. It's incredibly
smooth.
And it is actually the car to learn stick shift on, because Volkswagen, anyway, has got unbelievably light clutch pedals. But this one, I made the comment to Paul, this one feels like a light switch connected to nothing. It's the lightest clutch pedal in history. You could commute in this car and stop and go and never wear out your left foot. And you could learn so easily. So, but I mean, it's a perfect car. It was funny to be able to take something that fast, that small that fast, just because, you know, we ended up being the accidental
big dog. It's nice. We were the big dog in a few cases. I mean, everybody just kind of hangs out.
You are never going to be the big dog in a 1.2.
We kind of were.
No, please don't get me wrong. I'm not saying we were the big dog. We would be in the grand scheme.
You go flat and then you're the best.
I'm saying, hang on. So there are people that we've noticed here that don't want to spend the money on fuel. As you've observed other years, they don't want to just use up their fuel, and so they just kind of hang out at 90 miles an hour.
Yeah.
I'm saying.
Yeah.
And they'll just be going along where, you know, the Americans jump off the plane and it's flat to the floor. Yeah. So,
oh, dude, you
in
never...
a few cases, we were, you know, we were flying by people. Yeah. Of course, they're all trailers, but,
we flew by plenty of people. There were you know, big Audis, big Mercedes, and other things that were hanging out in the middle lane.
Things that
going
I thought
quickly.
We passed an SLS, we would pass big BMWs, just kind of hanging out, thinking, you could
going,
be really
going quickly
fast,
by
but,
American standards, but not going quickly by Audubon standards. And so, you know.
So it felt pretty good, is what I'm saying. Yeah. It was, you know.
Also,
like,
but I mean, for those sections of the Autobahn, there is always the chance that you guys have also just been ignoring the rules. So it's 120 and you just don't care.
Well, you
and
say
then
that.
Todd is going to get a picture sent home to him.
Let's hope not. You say that, but here's what was interesting. We noticed a couple things that related to this rental car because, and first off, there is this perception, and you've talked about it as well. There is this perception that everybody here is obeying the rules. I didn't see a lot of that the last couple of days. We had a lot of, it's listed at 120 and everybody is doing 140, 150, except for like the guy pulling the trailer in the right lane. Everybody's doing over the speed limit, which amazed me because I'm not used to that here.
And you can do it. 140, like if you don't go more than 20 over,
okay,
you're not going to get points on your license, and it's going to be €35.
Got it. Okay, there you go.
And so within that 20 range.
Exactly. If you drive 20 plus, it's never going to be all that
expensive.
That's
why everybody's doing that.
So, but like, if... And also, there's just locals. They know no cops are going to be showing up on a Saturday, and let's just go.
Yeah, okay. That's probably the case. Because I saw a lot of that. Yeah. I also saw, you know, you would think, at least I have this mystique, when you drive in Germany, they do it right. But yet, I literally passed a guy in middle lane BMW, and I couldn't figure out why he was doing a little drift left and a little drift right in his lane. He's like, why aren't you staying in the middle of your lane? I drove by him. He was looking at his phone.
Yeah.
So that's happened.
Of course.
We had that. We saw a couple of those. But
people
that one
pulling
was the
out,
most egregious.
You know, just doing dumb things.
People pulling out without signaling into the fast lane with fast cars coming.
But,
I mean, all the normal stuff.
Well, generally speaking, we're of this conversation very ongoing about, could this work in America? Why don't we have this in America? We love it so much, but it just couldn't for so many reasons. We're observing bad driving here too. Yeah. It happens worldwide. It doesn't matter.
Course.
But we're just thinking, could this happen in America? Maybe some places.
Yeah.
There's stretches in Utah that would be perfect for it.
Yeah.
You can't go unlimited though. You can't. Like in a country, you can't go from 120 kph, 130 kph to just do whatever
You're right, because the problem, and we were talking about it, in order for you to do it, you would have to have completely different driver training, and that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And you'd have to then you have to get completely different driver training retroactively, too. It's not like for the new drivers that started this week. No, I mean for everybody that currently has a license. And it's back to that graded license thing you and I have talked about, where it'd be cool if in the U.S. we had levels of licensing. Because then you could have
What are you saying? Like some people are allowed to go faster than others?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's exactly what we're saying.
How are you going to monitor this, man?
Well, you'd have to have the equivalent of what we call an HOV lane. So like a high occupancy vehicle lane would be the high speed lane, and you'd have to be you'd have to have that. But I agree with you. No, don't get me wrong. This is wrought with problems. There is no way to enact.
This is not going
to
happen.
There is.
Oh no, we're not saying it is.
We're dreaming. We're just
wishing for the same feeling that we get here.
Yeah.
We're wishing for that at home,
and
knowing it's never going to happen.
There are places.
What about that in Montana? They had like a thing where you could go fast.
They
right?
did.
Yeah.
They still do, and it's all on the honor system. It's okay if the weather is good and you feel comfortable in the car you've got. Okay, the cops are going to kind of turn a blind eye.
No. I'm not talking about turning a blind eye, but the speed limit actually being 100 miles an hour.
Well, for a while, Montana was any reasonable speed for your car, but they had so many people driving to Montana just to do it that they took that down and now have like 80 mile an hour speed limits posted.
Oof.
But the like Utah, that's for example, slow. Has sections, big sections, going through nothing on mostly straight roads that are posted 80, 85. So everybody's doing 90, 95 across the board.
Yeah.
So, and when I say that,
I mean... Is that with a barrier in the middle between the...
No.
A huge median.
Huge grass median.
Big grass.
With a ditch in the middle.
That grass is not going to do it, though. Isn't that, like, no barriers?
Depends. Only if you're going over bridges and stuff. Otherwise,
yeah,
it's just
otherwise, no,
two
just
lanes going one
space.
Way, big barrier, and then
you
two
see,
lanes the
see,
other way.
If you don't have a barrier, that then you can't really do more than 80, because the sketchiest stuff is going to happen. We have accidents. Like, we had one, like, a couple of weeks back.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a Golf hits a truck, because I don't know why that happened.
But it
so, but for some reason, the Golf actually goes over the rail, and it's like, you've seen, it's like rails this high.
They're huge, they're huge.
And hits a car in oncoming traffic. I mean, if you don't have a barrier there, like,
and you're saying that was with a barrier.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't have the barrier, that is not going to be good.
Anywhere we have opposing lanes that touch each other at freeway speeds is always a barrier. But a lot of these are divided highways, so you'll have, try to think about it in European measurement terms. You've got two lanes going one way and probably 30 meters of grass, and then two lanes going the other. So it's a big median. You could still see stuff where people slide across.
You absolutely could. And that does happen still.
Yeah. Well, you see it most of the time in the winter is when you see it. Yeah. Somebody loses it, and they find themselves all the way across
right
through the
across,
median
like,
on the other
how
lane.
That
Hello.
Happen, but it does.
Yeah, it is madness.
We're not saying this is the solution. We're dreaming, and we keep talking about it. It will never stop.
Yeah.
That's what we're saying. It's not a solution in any way, because, to your point, there's no way we're going to solve this.
But driving the Lotus back
somehow,
from Vegas, I'm going through Utah.
Yeah.
And by the way, I don't know if I've mentioned this before already or not, but that car, for some unknown reason, elicits two responses from people on the highway. Anybody not driving a large truck gets out of the way. Anybody driving a large truck either gets in the way or chases me or decides they must coal roll my car.
Yeah.
These are the responses.
Yeah,
I don't know why.
This.
It's like poking a bear with the guys in the big trucks. It's the weirdest
thing. I've experienced
thing.
The same
it's
thing.
It's the weirdest thing. It's
they
like,
want to
oh,
race.
You've got a little sports car. I'm going to race a little sports car. It's like I literally cannot see behind the past the hub of your wheel.
Yeah.
So please, come on. Let's not dance, because I'm the massive loser of this scenario.
Yeah, it happens.
But doing those somewhat fast stretches of Utah, everybody's doing 85 to 90, and that includes the big dually trucks, and it includes the 18-wheelers. It's everybody.
Are you sure? Like, the 18-wheelers are going to be doing 90?
They're doing well over
in
70.
In some stretches,
70, 75
yeah,
for sure.
Stretches,
they're
an 18-wheeler doing 90 is...
It's a missile. It's
that,
a missile.
That is freaking scary.
It
oh,
is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah, they're fast. Everybody's fast at those sections.
I mean,
so.
I'm appreciating your asphalt here.
Yeah.
It's so
you
smooth.
Always go on and on about
it's
the asphalt.
It's the best.
You always do.
That's what enables the high speed.
I so
it
you
just
see,
wouldn't
every
work
time
in most
you come
America.
Here and you say things like that, it sort of feels like I get the impression you live in a third world country where you have the worst roads.
In terms
but then
of
I watch the videos
driving.
And it's like, what are they talking about? This looks fine to me.
I mean, you know, places like L.A., certainly Detroit, the roads are not good. Mm-hmm. They're just not well taken care of. They're not
like
well maintained.
Like, not even on the freeway?
No. In a lot of cases, you'll get a lot of the expansion joints and rough roads and that kind of stuff. So 80 miles an hour just feels like, whoa, I'm out of control.
No.
But not everywhere.
Yeah,
not
it
everywhere.
Depends, it depends
places,
on where. It depends on where.
You know, the
sure.
cities, it gets beat up. But,
much faster,
you know,
yeah.
especially weather. But, you know, the pavement is just different. We had a little bit of a tiny rough section, and I said to Todd, this is the worst stretch of asphalt I've ever been in, and that's the glass
in Germany,
America.
Sure.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Well, but it does
so
vary.
Different.
I mean, the major interstates, like I'm talking about for taking on the Lotus coming Vegas to L.A., 90% of that is really good road.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's always one lane that's better than the other, always is, but
well,
most
yeah,
of that is pretty good road.
Trucks.
And there's, exactly, and there's section, but there's sections where... You know, if you could do 120 in this section of the road, it'd be fine. You know,
do drivers use studded winter tires in Germany? Is that
oh, no.
allowed?
No. You can't. You can in some parts of Austria, but here you can't.
Okay,
yeah.
See,
that helps too.
Snow chains. But...
That helps too.
Because I'll give you an example. I-70 up the pass, just outside
in Colorado,
out of Denver.
Yeah.
Interstate 70 is rutted because everybody leaves their studded tires on until April
and beats up the road.
And there's just grooves in the road. It exposes the rock of the concrete.
Of course it does,
and it's terrible.
Yeah.
And do they fix it for spring?
No.
No.
In the summer, you're just...
No, nobody
in
fixes
these
anything in America. See, you just give me the
it's
impression.
All, it's, all where, it's all where the money comes from. Yeah, I get that.
You've been
that.
To New York, though, right?
Yes.
But you haven't driven elsewhere in America and
I have not driven a car in America.
Okay.
We have to solve that at some point.
We need to fix
that
this.
It needs to be solved, for sure.
Well, guys, we've got a great debate from Jason C. out in Dallas here.
Yep.
He is a longtime Volvo owner. and also works as a certified mechanic at the local Land Rover dealer, mm-hmm. who has just recently acquired a Jaguar franchise.
Yep.
So he's got a lot of questions there. And of course, we've got all the questions on social media here as well. But we've posted this, of course, which is very late, overnight, as a matter of fact, in the U.S. So, yeah, a little bit less questions here because everybody's asleep. But that's all right.
Okay,
so,
we've got some good ones anyway.
We definitely have some good ones here.
The interesting thing about Jason's question, there's a lot of elements to it. But
can I ask an important one up front?
Please.
This email is from August 23rd. Is yes. Dallas all right flood-wise?
Dallas is fine.
Dallas should be fine, yes. Okay. Yes.
Houston, I grew up in Houston. Houston and Dallas are a little over 200 miles apart.
Gotcha.
Dallas is a little higher. Houston is a water-related war zone right now.
Yeah, I saw pictures and everything.
Yeah. And it's horrible. It's horrible. And the discussion has been that damage-wise, it may be worse than Katrina. I don't think the human damage reaches Katrina, which was obviously a whole separate problem.
Right.
But
right.
The Houston infrastructure is decimated because of the amount of water.
I'm seeing freeways that are underwater. I mean,
you're seeing whole swaths of the city where it's just trees and roofs. It's just,
I was going to say it's like people actually have to sit on their roofs because it's like that bad.
It's crazy.
Yeah, and we feel bad for anybody that's in that area. It's really, really awful.
Yeah, absolutely.
I still have family friends there, and it's been bad to hear about it for sure. But mm-hmm. the Dallas area is fine. The Houston area essentially is now slowly draining because the rain at least just stopped. That's the big thing, is the rain just hung out for the longest time. But anyway, so Jason's up in Dallas, and one of the interesting things about this is the fact that there's some shared specialty parts for Jaguar and Land Rover. And since he is a senior mechanic, which you could also read into shared problem parts, but that's okay.
Maybe.
Since he is a senior level mechanic at the Land Rover dealer, he theoretically could work on a Jaguar very easily with the parts that he has and the knowledge that he has. And he got to drive an XFR, and that may have been a bad thing because he's now obsessed with finding one with the discounts he can get from the dealership.
So we start out with his prior ownership here, and we showed Tom a picture of his 5-speed Saturn SL2 sedan, and I thought Tom was going to have a conniption fit over here.
Yeah.
So
I said it was very pretty.
Yeah, Tom was that's
very,
what he said.
He was very impressed with that car.
Uh-huh. So what else? Chevy Outlander minivan. Moving on to an 850 T5 Volvo wagon, which is cool. He's got a 2009 S80 T6 all-wheel drive with the executive interior package. And so, he also, like I said, sold the 850. So kind of a Volvo guy there.
Yeah.
And had made a few tuning things.
What motor does the S80 have?
S80 is a V6. The T6, turbocharged 6.
Does it have a bit of go?
Yeah, they're pretty good. I mean, it's not an enthusiast car by any means.
It's certainly not.
It's kind of like a 5 series, between a 5 and a 7 as far
as... Did he put suspension here? He did, right?
That was on the 850.
Yeah, the 850 T5, he did about everything you can imagine to that car, and then finally got rid of it. So that car... It was definitely tuned. The S80 has been much more of a, as he describes, it's his uninspired, boring car, but it's reliable.
But look, yeah, reliable.
So, yeah.
So he can't take this car to Cars and Coffee, even though that's not why we buy cool cars. It is an element of that.
But he wants something that's got passion. That's what he doesn't have. And he wants something that if he takes it to a Cars and Coffee, people can be like, that's interesting. That's a cool car to have here.
Yeah.
So that's not...
I guarantee there's like Volvo exclusive Cars and Coffee, and he's going to be a superstar with that thing.
Well, that's a different, that's a different
Volvo
group,
Volvo Cars and Coffee.
That's
I've
a
never
different
heard
group,
of that.
Oh, it's there. It's there. Yes, it is.
I'm not convinced.
Here in Germany, definitely. I promise you there's going to be an S80 owner's club. And they meet every other Sunday.
That sure is funny. Awesome.
So, but I mean, this XF's got the big 5-liter engine and wonderful car noises and all of that. But okay, Jason's a family man, 2 kids, wife, dog. He needs a sedan or wagon. He doesn't want an SUV. So we're limited to that. Now, what do we think the price range is here on this old XFR?
Well, I'm thinking 40s, somewhere in 40s.
That's my guess as well.
I don't know that they've dropped under 40 at this point, to be honest. And as Todd was saying earlier, he's become very intimate with this 5-liter supercharged V8 and the ZF 8-speed that are offered by both Land Rover and Jag. So... he's looking at this because, you know, as a senior level mechanic, he's got access to parts and the right tools.
Absolutely.
And that's the biggest thing. I mean, really what this is less of a debate about what car he should get because I think he's sold on the Jag.
This is what he says anyways.
He's kind of looking for that and looking for validation in a sense. Because this is a little bit different. For somebody who's got access to that, and Jason, I'm wondering, would they let you work on your own car, say after hours or something like that, since you're already a mechanic there? Yeah. You're certified, on and on and on, but you've got access to all these tools that the rest of us don't.
Yeah.
And so in that case, you know, when we talk about those cars that, oh, you'd be pouring a lot of money into to keep them maintained and all that kind of stuff.
And well, this is what he's worried about, right?
This is essentially a big question. I mean, we scroll down to the end of his email here. He's looking for different opinions, but I don't think you are, Jason. I think
you're looking for validation.
Is this the right car? But again, we're coming to the point where you're in a different place than just about every other person considering this car. So you're looking for a highway bruiser, as you said. Mm-hmm. The power is intoxicating. But yeah, you've got to consider the XFR because you're a family man. So what do we think here, gang?
I have a question, actually. If he doesn't actually want any other car, he just wants to know if we have any reason why he should not buy it. Mm-hmm. But he being the mechanic, because he's worried about reliability, shouldn't he be the one telling us whether this is a good or bad idea?
Well, but I think because he knows the potential issues and he can work on the potential issues, it means if it's a car that he loves but it might have problems, he can get around it. He can deal with it in a way that the rest of us couldn't. So
true,
I think it becomes a more viable option just because of that. I agree with you. I mean, theoretically, he could say, well, I think it's going to be a money pit. But he's kind of asking, do we think he's insane, is part of the reason of this question. And what I want to ask, and I've actually looked him up, these are running, it looks like, between 30 and 50 grand, depending upon how new you get.
Mileage, condition, all
totally,
that kind of
totally.
Stuff.
And how far back you go in years. The thing I'm going to say to you, Jason, more than anything, is I'm going to give you some please go drive these options. Because here's my only real concern. Right. If this excites you, Jason, I'm not going to turn you away from a car that already excites you. Because you can work on it yourself and you have the tools and the expertise.
But he could work on any car.
He could, yes.
And he's got the expertise for other cars.
For sure.
Yes. The only thing he does not have is like the computer stuff.
The Jaguar-specific tools. Agree.
No, I'm talking about the computer stuff specifically.
Yeah.
Like the ECU readout and what have you.
Sure.
Because the tools, this is going to be more or less like, and mechanics are like...
You're right.
They're great with just making tools. Like, if it doesn't work, they'll find a way.
Yeah, you're right.
They have resources.
Very true. Sure. No, certainly with his background, he could work on just about anything. But you have the ability to obviously be specialized in Jaguar if you want to be. I think it's great. I think it excites you. That's awesome. But I do think, I can think of three specifically that I want you to go drive before you pull the trigger on the Jaguar, just for frame of reference. Because my only real concern here is, does this car excite you because you haven't driven competitors? Did you stumble
Good
into
point.
This car,
That's
drive
an interesting
one,
point.
Go, this is awesome, right. I could work on it, let me just get this, and not go out and drive? And I'm just going to list them real quick. You need to drive the current M3 and the last M3. Mm-hmm. So the F80, and go back to the E30 as well.
Right.
That might be the E30.
Or the E90, you're
saying. Sorry, the E90. Thank you. Sorry.
E30 is going way back, and we love that car,
but
out of your price range.
The XF is the competitor to an E-Class and a 5 Series, isn't it?
Yes, but I would say it's almost a little smaller than those. I feel like the XF almost lives between the 3 and the 5 Series BMW.
Okay.
It's closer to 5 Series, but I think because of prices we're talking about, I think you should drive the E90, thank you for the correction, the E90 four-door M3 and the current M3. The current M3 is probably even used, still going to be out of budget.
I think it's out of range.
But the
good
E90,
for benchmarking.
Exactly. But
I like
E90
that.
Would be great.
I like
and then
that.
Because
the E90 would not be great, in fact, because it's too small a car for a family, because he says he has two kids, does he?
Two kids.
Yeah, that like because we looked at the wagons for my sister.
Okay.
And even the wagon is not going to cut it.
I actually think it's decent sized in the back, but I think you'd have to see what
you have.
What
you have one kid, right?
I do.
How much space do you have in the trunk of your Cayenne when you have to take the kid on a longer road trip?
Well, it's the larger question: what age kid do you have, and how much large plastic trash can sized vehicle?
And that goes down as the child gets older.
Exactly.
Yes?
Exactly right.
It's proportional.
You get into more. So if you're still into strollers and that kind of stuff, you're right. This will not be big enough. That's the unknown. That puts us, of course, look at M5s. You may as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Look at used M5s. And the farther you go back, the really cheaper they get.
Yes, but
you gotta drive.
Are we in used Phaetonville as far as maintenance and reliability?
And then, of course, I have to say it, Chevy SS. You've got to at least go drive.
All right, fair enough.
I'm sorry. I'm stealing people's thunder here. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, we're at a limited choice here, but I thought what you could talk about, too, is the second part of this, guys, and that is the uniqueness of the car.
Mm-hmm.
We have rarely, I don't think ever, recommended a Jaguar XFR
No, we haven't.
On the podcast because it's out of price range, and then if we're talking about a $45,000 Jag, why don't you consider other cars? Because this thing is an engine wearing a car. It really is. I mean, it's just all about the power. It's also automatic. And we're not thinking, okay, canyon car, track car, even though you could.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had this car on track at Motor Press Guild track days.
Yeah.
We've both driven this. We like it. It's a monster. But as far as uniqueness of the car from a car show perspective, it's going to be pretty different. But we don't know about cars in Germany. I mean, you know, obviously he's in Dallas. But what about enthusiasts here for Jags? We've seen a few around. But, I mean, what's your take on Jaguar ownership here in terms of car enthusiasts? Are there a lot? Are there a little?
Dude, we have Mercedes. We have BMW.
That's pretty much it.
Yes. So you really see the Jaguar, like, sedans. You do see a bunch of F-types and the new sedan. I forget, the F-Pace.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
You see those, and then you have the occasional Jaguar sedan. This used to be different back in the day when Jaguars actually looked a bunch different from the era where they still had two tanks and stuff like
tanks. The old classic ones.
The 70s. I mean, they had these like huge trunklets.
Yeah.
And they just looked baller as hell.
Yeah.
Now they just look like a.
They look a lot more.
Yeah,
similar.
They try they look to similar. Look like the German stuff.
Sure. Mm-hmm. That's
minus
fair.
A bit, but you know.
No, but you're right. They look a lot more normal than they used to. They used to look a lot more unique. I can take that here as well. And you're right. I have seen quite a few F-types since we've been here.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen a single Jaguar sedan. It's a very interesting point.
I was just curious. I mean, we see far more in America, definitely. Yeah. I mean, Jaguar is a huge market there. And yeah, we love them. But
it's
still
an alternative choice.
That's what I'm saying, you know. It's very unique, but he's in a unique position. And
yeah,
I think from the thing you're looking for the Cars and Coffee mentioned, yeah, you'd get looks. It's a unique car. Nobody really rolls up in this. Because this was the, you know, older executive, you know, you love Jags. That's kind of, I think, the positioning where it is.
Sure.
But I think it's very unique for you. It'd be like an 18-year-old driving a Corvette C7. What you're not the target market. How is this possible?
But they're cool and they look
but they're
cool,
still cool.
And they've got great power. Interesting engine note. I see all the reasons this excites you, Jason, for sure. But I just my only real hesitation is make sure you've driven competition, so you at least know where does this sit versus just oh that's cool. I drove it. I like it. It sounds awesome. I could work on it. And you instantly bought it. I think we at least need to do some benchmarking, as you like to say, Paul, to know where it is in general. That doesn't mean it's not a buy. But I think you've got to have driven the others recently for comparison purposes.
And I'd like to think that since you're in this position to be able to work on it, you're getting a good car because like we found with all the luxury cars that drop off a cliff, you know, this is a $100,000 car at least, brand new.
Yeah, it's close to
Drops off a cliff when it becomes used. And yeah, I love that car.
Theoretically, Jason does his own pre-purchase inspection and it's done very, very well. Yeah.
He's really looking hard. Yeah,
how much is a C63 wagon?
Oh.
You used to have those, right?
Yeah.
We don't have the C63s anymore. We can get the E-Class wagon.
No, it's all E-Class.
I'm not talking about the new one, though, like a generation back. I mean, if it's the E-Class wagon, that's even better.
Oh, yeah, they'd be great. But if we're going to talk hot wagons, though, he's got to
start
shopping.
Which is all we see here in Germany.
Exactly. We started a game earlier. I'm not kidding. We started a game earlier.
This is funny.
Where Paul was like,
Cadillac,
look,
the
they're
Cadillac,
all... Exactly.
Buy the Cadillac.
Yeah,
yes.
the problem with the CTS-V wagon, which would be awesome.
Yeah,
the CTS-V wagon would be amazing, and that's obviously kind of the king of this segment in the U.S. The problem is they're still 55 grand or so, so I don't know that that's possible.
Maybe. But that's a good contender.
It's worth looking, depending upon how high his budget is. He hasn't given us a cap. He's just talked about used XFR prices, so it's kind of hard
Jaguar
to know.
XFR or the Jaguar XFR? Which should I get?
Exactly.
You know?
But you and I were sitting at a stoplight earlier, and you made a joke about how many wagons were all around us. And at first, we started counting
we always
wagons,
see it when we come here.
And we got 6 or 10 wagon shapes counted before I stopped us and I went, you know what would make a lot more sense? If we started counting cars with trunks. And then we proceeded to sit in silence, I'm not kidding, for 2 or 3 minutes with cars going by because there were no trunks. No car anywhere had a trunk. And it was like, oh look, there's one. It's all wagons.
This bothers me so much, right? This
Why?
Because I like the sedans, like a yeah. BMW 3 Series, 5 Series.
They look great.
Yeah,
they look great. So much better. And like in my neighborhood, like I have one really classy dude, and then he used to have the A6, right?
Okay. Uh-huh.
Big motor, black, good wheels, end of story, right?
Cool, yeah, yeah.
Replaced it with the new E350, great wheels, black, end of story. Classy as hell.
Yeah.
And everybody else is just going with the freaking wagons. Yeah. I can't look at wagons no more.
It was amazing because we started playing this joke. And since we left, I think it was since we left Stuttgart, we quit counting somewhere in the process. But I think we still had only counted like 8 cars and trunks. I mean, it was just insane. And think about the amount of traffic moving through both Stuttgart and on a freeway. And,
yeah.
You know, once it started raining, we were concentrating on driving. We quit counting trunks, but otherwise, it was like 8 cars with trunks.
Well, of course, the conversation goes to Texas again with the space. You know, when you're building and just the way cities are built in Europe. I mean, you need the smaller cars. So far, I've seen 2 Jeep Grand Cherokees.
Yeah,
and they look pretty big, even though it works. The Jeep Renegade works here, by the way.
You were saying that earlier.
It works.
Yeah, it seems to fit in this traffic world better than it fits in the U.S. Yeah. Meanwhile,
the Renegade is the 500, right?
Yes, it is. 500X.
Correct.
Yeah, it's that one.
Correct.
With your favorite,
as a matter of fact.
Exactly. Yeah, now available in flesh color. What are you doing? Anyway, no. But last night in Stuttgart, we saw a Hummer H1.
Yeah, that's the good one. I saw one of these parked at the side of the road the other day, and the wheel was like this much on the actual road.
Yeah.
But the guy did a perfect parking job.
Yes,
you're gonna have
just
to.
Just does not fit.
You're gonna have to.
When we went into the,
our eyes just went really wide. Like,
couldn't believe it.
H1.
Yeah, and of course he was parked off by himself because he needed to be. But we went into the parking garage at the Mercedes Museum today. And the entrance at that parking garage was barely wider than the Seat. And I just thought,
I thought we were going to scrape.
How many places can you just not go in your Hummer H1 because it just flat out won't fit
down
the road?
My lifestyle's limited just because I can't actually go there.
Seriously.
My car's not small enough. Oh, man. Well, we've been having all these fun conversations about, you know, size of cars. We're marveling at wagons everywhere. But it's perspective, of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wagons just don't exist anymore in the U.S. They're just not sold. Everybody wants a CUV or an SUV.
Yeah.
And we've got the space.
And those 5-seaters are, that 5-seat SUV world is big here, too.
It is. There's a lot more crossover here.
Did you see down in the airport for the Frankfurt Motor Show the ad that they have with the Mercedes X-Class? The pickup?
No, I haven't seen that yet.
There's going to be so many new Mercedes pickup trucks in America.
It's a Nissan chassis underneath. Yeah. It's not a real Mercedes. I'm sorry. As soon as I found that out, they're just doing some little partnership with Nissan.
But aren't they even talking about not selling that in the U.S.?
And they might not.
Yeah.
And I was hoping for a ground-up, real Mercedes redesign because the interior is not even nice.
You want the people that brought you the G-Wagon make you a pickup. That's what you wanted.
Yes, I want that thinking.
Have you driven a G-Class?
Oh, I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm just saying that's where Paul's head's at. He's like, let's do a pickup truck,
let's do a pickup truck.
Yeah.
Come on, this little half-size Nissan thing. And as soon as I heard that, I cannot unsee. I see a Mercedes, and it's a Nissan.
Have you guys seen the Maybach G-Class?
I can't say I have.
It's crazy. It costs all the money in the world, right?
Yeah,
I don't remember.
We saw
four, but it's got like a soft top, right? But only for the back passengers.
Oh, that. Of course,
and then you have them seats and everything like that. Like
who buys this
Maybach?
It's absurd.
Who buys this car?
Of course.
Is it all for Dubai? Is it all?
Yes, it must be.
You know,
because it's based on the 4x4. Whatchamacallit?
The 4x4 squared.
Yes,
we saw that. We saw one of those, and our mouths hung open again.
Yeah, seriously.
Why does that exist?
With the dual shocks.
Yeah.
That is so pretty.
It's so pretty.
It's insane.
I'd love a nicely styled, doesn't need to be a G-Wagon block
turned into
a pickup truck, but just, you know, nice style, but a real Mercedes.
Uh-huh.
This is not a real Mercedes. They're telling the world that it is.
Is the interior going to be all Benz?
Well, it's all Benz branded, but you look in there and it's sort of, not that visually interesting.
It's platform sharing.
Yes.
It's classic
which
platform
I dislike.
So, but like, is the dashboard in its shape, it's going to be a Nissan dashboard?
No, it's unique to Mercedes, but it doesn't feel like Mercedes did it. And I had a pause looking at
it and
thought, come on, boys.
But
this
it's
is
just
not
like,
the real deal.
It's just like the GLA, being the Infiniti XQ.
Very much.
Or
yeah. See, we've already got the Nissan relationship there.
It's the same thing.
Yes.
And both of those, they have different, they have unique styling.
Conceived by non-car people.
Well, they have unique styling and they have unique dashboards and that kind of stuff. But yet you get in both of them in proximity, which we had the GLA AMG 45 we drove for the show.
Yes,
and
yes.
And shortly thereafter, my wife had a rental car of the Infiniti.
Right, right.
And it was interesting to see how much they shared.
Yeah.
And that's what we're talking about with this pickup, too.
It's okay. They're going to sell a
it
ton
works,
of them.
It works.
Fine, but I'm not convinced. The next generation, when they decide to do a real Mercedes chassis and interior and...
But I have
but
to say, though...
such a dichotomy.
I have to say, though, I don't think in pickup truck... The home of big pickup trucks, the U.S., I don't think, in general, that a true Mercedes heavy-duty competitor pickup to the F-150s of the world, I don't think it sells.
Oh, every rancher in Wyoming is going to laugh you
I don't think
off
it sells.
The block.
I don't think it's worth it. I think hearing that they may not bring it to the U.S., I think makes actual like market sense. But we'll see.
It's if you don't want to carry peat moss from Home Depot in your SUV. You want an actual lined bed.
Oh, stop.
And it's not going to tow anything. What are you going to tow with that? A feather? A couple of jet skis?
Well, but that's
no.
The only way they sell
towing
pickups
in America. Horse trailer, your big fifth wheel, you're towing stuff, man. Come on.
We're up to like 20,000 pounds now to tow, which is pretty much you hauling your house down the street. I'm so tired of the towing commercials where it's just a bigger
Look,
number than we got last
year. Look, I can tow my
Hobie
Cat behind my pickup truck now. Yeah. No, I'm sorry. Not sold.
I never thought you'd be a towing snob. I never thought that, but that's starting to become your thing.
It is. As soon as I've gone racing, I'm looking at trailers now,
I know.
I'm all about 30-foot trailers.
I know.
Two race cars. Two.
All right, stop.
Enclosed trailer.
Stop. Okay, seriously.
I just saw an M5 on, not Craigslist, but sort of like that, but
yeah.
For cars.
Uh-huh.
And there was like a guy with an M5, and he had a button for a trailer hitch, so it would come out there, like, oh,
sure.
My. On his M5.
On
are you
M5.
Serious?
Wow.
If you buy an M5 and you put a trailer hitch, you
there's
nah.
Something wrong.
Not yes.
We'll be right back after this.
Here at Podcast One, we love hearing from you. We read every tweet and comment you send our way. So don't miss your chance to take our summer listener survey. Just go to podcastone.com and click on the survey banner. Or go to podcastone.com/mysurvey. It only takes a few minutes, and it gives you the opportunity to make a direct impact on your favorite shows. Tell us how you really feel so we can get to know you better. We value your thoughts and participation. So check out the survey at podcastone.com/mysurvey. Or click on the survey banner on podcastone.com.
Okay, so we've got a few questions from you guys. We posted, obviously, at what would be for us off hours.
Yeah.
We still have some questions. And some questions for Tom. And I actually wanted to answer a question from Max of last time.
Okay, all right.
That he asked about Lemons, and I wanted to address it here. He asked about, because we were talking about the range of cars at Lemons, and so he asked about how does the $500 thing work? Because he was talking.
Oh,
we were talking
yeah.
about
no,
cars
no.
that
Address
didn't really
this.
Weigh $500. Here's
you
the
were
thing.
Even mentioning
he was talking about is there a cap to how much money you can spend? Actually,
yeah.
No. Here's the thing about the $500.
It's dangerous.
Yeah.
$500.
Here's the thing about $500 cars is what you have to be able to do is theoretically, and you can bring the paperwork of your bill of sale. You could bring just the book to say I've owned this car forever, but it's now only worth $500. But you have to be mm-hmm. able to show the advertisers at Lemons. I legitimately got this car for $500 or very close to it.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, you could theoretically put as much money as you'd like into the car.
You could
now,
go nuts.
Lemons requires a certain level. They require a certain level on brakes, roll cage, fire suppression, ignition kill. There's certain things you have to do to any car. You can't just buy a $500 car on the lot down the street and drive it in Lemons. There are certain things you have to do that will take you a number with a comma in it to accomplish.
Yeah. Yeah.
But after that, this is why you see guys, there's that one builder that 1 year raced a plane chassis, 1 year raced a Camaro on its roof. I mean, you can take it and just make it your build project from your $500
right.
donor car. Think of it as the donor car, and now how much do you want to spend to go nuts? And there really isn't an upper limit.
I mean,
but
brakes
you've
alone.
Got to be kidding.
AC Delco, or are we putting StopTech, Wilwood, you know, what
sure.
are we doing?
Sure, sure.
Yeah, you can spend money.
Yeah.
You want to win because of that underlying theme that we keep talking about
mm-hmm.
in Lemons, this, hey, we're goofy, and, you know, I heard originally, back in the day, when it started, they threw lemons onto the track, actually.
Mm. Okay.
That sounds kind of dangerous and unnecessary to me when you're racing,
yes,
but
there
okay.
is that as well.
And it was sort of a crash-up derby, but then over the past decade and a half, it's become real racing, and just because you have a clown head on a spring on your roof doesn't mean you're not racing hard.
But those people were still driving hard. Yes, they were both of the above, yeah.
Right. I mean, one Scirocco is the Sriracha Scirocco. That's hard to say, by the way.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's got the green spout on his roof, and he's racing hard. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you can go nuts.
It was surprisingly legitimate, but that's why on the other end of the spectrum, the Corvette that we saw, they actually gave that guy a penalty.
Oh,
because
they
didn't believe it was a $500 car. It was a C3 Corvette that was clearly in decent shape to begin with. They had taken it, put the BMW straight six in the front because they were bored, and then turned it into a really very classy, like, take it to Concours build. And so they got dinged as not being a $500 car because the organizers said there's no way your donor car was $500. The amount of money they put in after that, really not a problem.
But that's so dangerous, because as soon as you start putting a bunch of money in, the organizers have an opportunity, I guess, to purchase your car.
I'm not sure how the clause works. The clause used to be to try to keep the people from going nuts.
So it prevents exactly
that. It was supposed
to
be that the organizers could commandeer your car at race in for $500 if they wanted. I'm not sure how that clause still exists, but there's supposed to be an upper limit. I'm not really sure where it is.
Just this. Oh, yeah, car's $500, and then it's, you know, $20,000 race car underneath. Come on.
But I have to say, though, the guy with the Polizzi van, that has to be a $20,000 or $30,000 build.
That was up there. That looked really nice. He's got Porsche
the
big
entire
reds,
thing caged,
corners.
Porsche brakes, full engine transplant. I mean, that was done. Mm-hmm. So you could spend a lot. Anyway, so that was a question from last time, but I wanted to address it, Max. Sorry to run back to lemons. We have many others.
Yeah,
what
we
struck
do.
You guys?
There was a quick one from Victor about the Porsche Cayman GTS piece that just recently dropped. Hope you guys are enjoying that, and that was a recent update from driving it, and you and I have both realized that we need to continue to do that with our own cars.
Definitely.
And so
absolutely.
We will more and more. So thanks for watching. Hope you're enjoying. But he's mentioning about my radar detector that was in there, and I deliberated about taking that out or leaving it in during the video, but I thought, you know what? This is how I'm using the car.
Sure.
And therefore, you get to see how that's in there. But he's noting that it doesn't really look too good. It sort of clashes with the style of the cockpit, which I agree with, but he's asking about a hidden, kind of tucked away, built-in integrated radar detector, which I'm open to, but Victor, right now, I'm switching off between two cars. I didn't yet buy another radar detector, so I'm plugging that into the Jeep, or I'm plugging that into the Cayman, kind of going back and forth, so I need just a quick change. That's why it's in there, but again, that's how I'm using it right now. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's not ideal. It's not the best. But hopefully I can solve that here.
How many tickets does that actually save you?
It's helped. The last one it didn't because of the special situation.
Because of the speed.
Well, there was that. But we were cresting a hill. The cop and I were both cresting the hill. And as you know, it's line of sight. It can't see over the hill and down the hill on the other side. It's only really if it can see kind of far away line of sight. And so as soon as we crossed by each other at the very crest of the hill, he got me. And that's when the radar detector lit up, but it didn't have enough time. And again, it's not an insurance policy. It might give you 2 or 3 seconds. It's not a guarantee.
Yeah.
But in California, it has saved me a lot because it'll just kind of go off and I'm thinking, all right, that's different than the usual, you know, the grocery stores the garbage.
I think it definitely has saved you much more in L.A. than it ever has in Utah, because in L.A. you would have this random Tuesday once this calendar year, that cop's making quota and he's sitting behind a billboard and he won't be there the rest of the year.
True.
And so all
true.
Of a sudden you'd hear weird chatter and you slow down because that's not normal.
And then sure enough,
you'd be saved.
Yeah.
That definitely happened to you a few times in L.A. I think it's been less likely in Utah. But
How much is one of those things?
They're $400, not inexpensive, but they will upgrade the electronics if you send it back to them for whenever they upgrade to the latest greatest. So you're not buying something for $400 that you're going to throw away eventually when the new tech comes out.
Yeah.
They'll take it, they'll upgrade it, they'll clean it up, and you'll have the same unit, but it's the latest technology. So that's why I thought it's worth the investment. I've had it for, since...
had a long time.
Yeah, 8 years now, something like that.
I think you got it when you got the first Cayman.
How many cops actually do the thing where they actually wait until they see somebody speeding and then they turn on that tech?
That's the other problem. It doesn't defend against instant on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a problem. And there's always this ongoing battle between the people with the radar detectors and the guys, you know, the people with the radar guns.
You see here in Germany, that would be highly illegal to have one of those things. But what you actually do here is you have like a, for your navigation system, you have a database of A, the installed cameras that are always there.
Right. Yeah.
And then you have just a database of this is where cops usually do radar controls.
Is that like the Waze app?
It's kind of like Waze app for us, yes.
You're using? I'm assuming. Yes, yeah. I've heard of Waze before. And it's just like they have a database and this is like this. Just
this is a
pay attention
area.
Here. Yes, right. Exactly.
Yes.
So that serves you pretty well. And
certainly,
but
the
cops would know it's a known area, and why do they keep going back there? They know
this
that
is a good question.
Not everybody else knows.
This is a good question.
Yeah, no, actually, you are very likely to get tickets at places where you've driven a million times, and
really?
You know exactly that there's a camera.
And sure enough,
but then you just because you drive there every friggin' day, and then sometimes you just forget, and then there you go.
Yeah, sure. Well, that actually leads us straight into a question from Michael on Facebook, where he said, "What driving-related apps do we use?" And then he lists many. He says,
"He's got
Waze for directions, Fueli to track gas, Gas Buddy for gas prices, and Speedbox for a standalone separate speedometer." Wow. That sounds like I was wondering about that too. Don't you have? Didn't your car come with one?
GPS related, though.
Yeah, I guess.
So you get accurate speed information.
Actually, I've never really gotten into Waze. Now, maybe because I moved out of LA right at the time that Waze became the thing everybody used. I remember in LA using the Thomas Guide, which if you don't know what a Thomas Guide is,
I did too.
Los Angeles is so dense and immense that you couldn't buy like a normal map for Los Angeles. I suppose you could, but everybody that lived there had the Thomas Guide. It is about an 8x10 sized spiral bound laminated book that is at least an inch thick, and you can look up every block in the city.
Welcome to pre-iPhone days.
Seriously. And so when you would go somewhere random in LA, you would get the address and you would like be scrolling your way through pages and be like, oh, I'm going here. I remember that, which was madness. It actually sounds like I grew up in 1920 when I tell that story. But it wasn't really that long ago. But right around the time that I left LA, which is about 7 years ago, was about the time that the Waze app was becoming a thing. So I've never really used it. I use Google Maps
a lot.
It's
pretty good.
It is good.
I actually heard through Beverly Hills, residents were getting angry because of all the traffic around that area. Waze would route people through neighborhoods.
Of course they would.
And suddenly their neighborhood sleepy little street was getting massive traffic because of the Waze app.
Of course.
And so now they're inventing other apps to get around that, and it's this
of course
battle of data.
I do use Fueli to track gas and all of the stuff that I'm doing for car maintenance, and that actually is really cool. Beyond that, I don't chase a lot of other stuff.
Nor do I. I mean, to be honest, I don't find out the fuel mileage of my cars because, you know what? I don't care. I just fill it up and go.
I do track that. It doesn't really change what I'm doing, but I do track that.
It doesn't change what I do. I'm measuring.
But because I'm keeping track of that, I'm keeping track of maintenance, I'm keeping track of all those things, so I know what that is.
Most of the time, I don't have time
to
enter the data and all that kind of stuff, and I'm going anyway. I'm going to drive how I drive, and, you know, I just go. So, I don't know. Do you use any apps when you're...
I use the GoPro app for my cameras, so
there you go.
I do that in the car.
For sure. Of course you do.
But that's about it.
Well, you've got a question on here, Tom, from Christopher, who's asking you, which cars do you wish would come to Germany? And then conversely, which cars, of course, do we wish would come across the pond? I will say wagons to that. We just wish wagons would come on over, come back.
Well, especially considering we're talking about a lot of cars that are over here available in wagons and we don't get them. We've seen the Honda Accord wagon. We've seen every BMW variant.
They're
wagon.
So useful.
The little 1 Series that we didn't get that was the wagon, that's a very cool little enthusiast car.
We don't have a 1 Series
Well,
wagon.
It's the 1 Series 4-door, which has the little hatchback.
It's a hatchback. That's just like a Golf. It's not a wagon.
But we never got it.
We still don't get it. We still like it.
Yeah, but you're talking about wagons, but you do have hatchbacks.
We do have some hatchbacks. Yes. But hatchbacks are grouped, at least in kind of public consciousness, in the same perception in the U.S. as wagons. And so there's
a huge
group of people that would never buy a GTI because it's a wagon. I hate wagons. It's like,
they're so great. All right.
I think you're just trying to joke with me here. This does not sound right. Anyway, because it's like you're not going to call a GTI a wagon, are you?
No.
Well,
we think of them
as hatchbacks.
Know
but
so little about cars before you go ahead and call it a wagon.
But there is a perception in the U.S. against station wagons, and people that are not car enthusiasts, they consider that a wagon. They're all grouped in together.
We're as enthusiasts, we know, but generally speaking, the people would just kind of be glossing over and generalizing.
We used to have something similar in Germany.
Yeah.
Every off-road vehicle would be a Jeep.
Okay, sure.
This is before...
This is what we're talking about.
Yeah. This is, and this is sort of like, so give me a Audi, Kleenex.
An right? Audi All-Road would be a Jeep, right?
No.
It's a wagon and an All-Road.
No. But like a 4RAV, all right, look at that Toyota Jeep over there.
Sure, sure, yeah.
But you're right. It's jet ski for all personal watercraft. It's Kleenex for all facial tissue.
Yeah.
It's you're using a brand name in the place of for that thing.
Exactly. Xerox for any copy of anything
exactly.
ever.
Exactly.
Yeah, I hear that.
All right, so which cars
so now
would
we
you...
call it SUV, right? You know.
Yes, it's a SUV. Correct.
When we were here for our pilgrimage film.
We just drove by Leonberg.
We met with the guys at Gimbala, and they referred to an SUV as if it was a word. So instead of an SUV, they pronounced it as a word, SUV. And
it's
we
SUV.
Decided that should
which,
be everywhere.
Which Germans, some Germans just kind of think that's a word. Others do it in, ironically so, like,
sure.
like sort of like a bunch of hipsters.
Okay, good to know.
Good.
But most people are aware that it's SUV. Just saying. We do know stuff here in Germany as well.
Well,
that's
but,
not
I,
what we're
but
saying.
I didn't assume that was a German across the board thing. I assumed that was a thing that guy just did.
Oh yeah.
That oh yeah. But some people thing. Actually do say Zuf. Zuf. We say Zuf.
Zuf.
Yeah.
That's even better. That's even
perfect,
better.
Perfect.
Well, okay, so the cars that you think should come over besides Dodge Hellcats to Germany.
I was going
to
say Dodge Hellcat though. Because
I knew you were. Besides Hellcats, what
GT
cars?
GT350.
Okay.
Oh,
GT350.
Sure.
We've been
sure.
seeing Mustangs around.
And
by
then
way.
I want to have the track pack Camaro.
Okay, good.
We do have the
good.
Camaro, we do have the Mustang now, and we do have CTS and ATS.
But just particular packages of those cars that you
I
wish
guess.
Were
yeah. exactly. And
available.
Then what I like about American cars is you got the say out there, right?
Yeah.
And it's got like half a motor.
Yeah.
Whereas if you buy any Cadillac in America, it's going to have some type of motor, like it's going to have
that's
some go.
Yeah,
right?
You're right.
Oh, yeah.
You're
oh,
right.
Yeah.
So I would just like, I just prefer that. I always kind of figured back in the days, American cars, oh, they have V8s everywhere. All of them cars must be at least somewhat fast.
Yeah.
But it's like 7-liter motors. It's like 150 horsepower. It takes 20 seconds to 100.
You're right. No, that
KPH.
Was the thing. You're right. That was the thing. Is that the classic V8s? You go V8, and you see the cubic inches, and you go, "That's an enormous engine." And then you see hear the horsepower, and you go, "Wait, that's really all we're doing?
Why isn't this fast?"
Really
or do
amazing.
People
yeah.
still do the cubic inches?
It's a lingering thing for
classic cars, hot
with
rods.
With the Blues Brothers, the Blues Brothers still refer to it in cubic inches
that,
and the cop tires and everything
exactly.
like that.
It's a thing that
cigarette
that
light
lingers.
Work.
That's
it's a
funny.
Thing that lingers in kind of American car vernacular, but it's steadily going out further and further for sure.
Okay.
You get the guys that like the big V8s and they'll care about it. You get the guys that like the classic cars and they'll only speak in cubic inches.
All right,
but,
so we have liters. So next up is going to be meters. Let's try that for. Change.
Funny. Hey, look. When I was growing up, it was learn the metric system, and then we just decided we didn't care. I don't know what happened.
Really? Was that like a thing they wanted to change?
Oh, yeah.
States?
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Growing up, we were all supposed to be learning the metric system, and then I honestly don't understand because it was like a thing they were having happen in all the schools. In the same way, honestly, this is the way I can relate it. Even though obviously what I'm about to describe for my son does exist, but we never taught him about recycling. We recycle.
Yeah.
Bottles and cans and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
We were talking about recycling. It was never a thing that we like made a speech about. It was just like that goes in here and this goes in there. He starts going to school and now he's like recycling obsessed. Okay? So the message is being delivered in schools, okay? In the same way, when I was in elementary school, it was like, okay, I know it's miles per hour and it's inches and feet, but we should really learn metric too, because it's coming. And somewhere it never materialized. It's the weirdest thing.
So how does it work for you? Like a meter? That's sort of like a yard. And
Pretty much.
That's the discussion point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's around 3 feet, you know.
It's just, I do have Fahrenheit. I never get Fahrenheit. It's like 30 degrees Celsius. It's like close to 90, right?
Mm-hmm.
But
then
you have like 60 and that's very cold, isn't it?
It's not super cold, no.
You used to live
in London, right? In
London and
right?
also in Norway, yeah.
So you know Celsius?
A little bit.
So 60 Fahrenheit is what in Celsius?
I'm aware of range. 60 Fahrenheit is somewhere, I had to get my converter out, is somewhere in probably like 18, 20.
Okay, so, but like 40, when does it start, like what's below freezing?
32 is freezing, which
32,
is what's weird.
Yes.
Instead of
yes,
zero
this
freezing.
Is what, this is what
zero.
Bothers me
and
so much.
The scales are so different that I think it's at negative 30, they actually are equal.
Mm-hmm.
But then they drift away from each other again. Because it's just this weird scale, because of the way they work. And because...
So you can understand, though, when I say the Celsius system is just much easier, because freezing is zero.
The metric system is much
easier.
Everybody says,
well, you got 10 fingers, you got 10 toes.
Yeah.
Everything divide into 10.
Come on,
easy,
all the
right?
way back, all the way back to the Romans. They did everything in 10.
Yes.
Okay, this is not news.
Yes.
It's not a newfangled
and
thing.
And then you know what everybody says. Americans say, well, who put a man on the moon? Yeah, right.
Let's not bother people with the metric system anymore. I'm very,
how do
very
we get
sorry.
Back into
I do find, I do find this kind of stuff interesting.
It is bizarre. It is bizarre. Anyway, okay, so we've been all over the map on this podcast. We probably should wrap it up. We have another one coming later this week. You're hearing this on Tuesday, and we will be doing a road tour that day between Nürburgring and Spa, a road tour part of our pilgrimage trip. We are going to then record with those guys, some of the people on the trip.
Yeah, whoever wants to join us,
yep.
So you'll get to meet,
so
meet
you'll,
folks on
you'll
the trip.
Hear from many of them on Friday. By the Friday when you hear that, this coming Friday, we will actually be, I'll be back in the States, and Paul will be staying for the Frankfurt Motor Show.
Yeah.
So that's happening, but you'll hear a little bit more about the trip. We're excited to share those guys' experiences, too.
Yeah, that'll be fun. It'll be maybe like Ted, first time on a track. We'll drop you right onto the ring.
Yeah.
Never been on a track before?
Yeah.
How about Spa?
Yeah,
we'll start at the top. It's downhill from here. You know this.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom, for being with us. Glad
yeah,
to have you, man.
Appreciate it, man.
Vielen Dank.
Perfect.
See, he is German. Despite what you think, he's German.
Absolutely.
He truly
Very
is.
Much so.
All right,
you
guys.
You should know Vielen Dank by now. I'm just saying.
No, we don't.
You've been like four times. What do you think thank you means in German?
Couldn't tell you.
Try vielen Dank.
All right. He said it. Cheers, guys.